Hello and welcome inside the War Room. My name is Keenan and you are now tuned into the podcast full of NHL updates, scores, rants, and of course the infamous hot takes. In this episode, we'll be talking about the Oilers' offseason moves, including the firings, the additions, the major signings, the 2018 draft selections and a little bit about them, and my personal projected lines for how the Oilers are going to start next year, the 2018-19 NHL season. So, let's jump right in, starting with the Oilers' offseason moves. Yes, I am alone today, but that is okay. We are going to have one hoot of a time. So, the assistant coach firings, first thing that I want to talk about is that this is a major thing. I know, as an Oilers fan personally, that lots of Oilers fans were super happy to hear that a lot of the assistant coaches got fired. Personally, I'm okay with it. Some of my other family members aren't, but I like the additions we made, which I'll get to after. So starting with the firings, Jay Woodcroft fired. He's promoted to the head coach of the Condors. Now, I don't know if I agree with that. I mean, he was a decent assistant coach. I feel like he had some issues with the special teams. Not some issues. He had a lot of issues with the special teams. And that was one thing that really kind of like drew me away from liking Jay Woodcroft was just because of the way that he ran it. Considering if you look back at last year's stats of having like 10% power play and like a 70% penalty kill, that's brutal. I mean, one season, I can understand. So I'm not going to hate on the guy a ton. Just I didn't like his coaching style last year. But good for him. I'm glad that he got the head coach job with the Condors. He's also been with McClellan since 2008. So this season, I guess, would have been his 10th season with McClellan had he have stayed with the Oilers. So good job, Jay Woodcroft. Congratulations. I'm happy for you. Hopefully our Condors will do well, and I am sure that under your direction they will. So Jim Johnson, assistant coach, also fired. That one, I didn't really hear much about Jim Johnson, so I mean, that one I could really care less about. That sounds kind of bad. I care about the fact that he was fired. I mean, it sucks that anybody has to get fired. But I don't feel like, I don't remember him ever doing really anything bad for us. So I guess I kind of disagree a little bit, but that's just my personal opinion. Ian Herbers, assistant coach, fired. He's returning as head coach of the U of A Golden Bears. Congratulations to him going right back to the Golden Bears. Get them back on that long championship run. And congratulations to the U of A Golden Bears on all of their championships recently. Like, they are killing it. They are absolutely killing it, and good for them. Kudos to them. Dustin Schwartz, the goalie coach, returning. That's a good deal. And Paul Coffey as a skills coach returning. I'm happy about both of those. I think Dustin Schwartz does a good job as a goalie coach. I don't think that Talbot's downfall last year was due to Dustin Schwartz's coaching, which obviously, I mean, Peter Chiarelli agrees with, considering he's returning. I think it was more of Talbot having kids, like, early in the season and midway through the season. I think that kind of took a hit a little bit. So I'm sure he's going to pick up the slack this year, hoping for 500 hockey this year as well, which would be nice, which I know if Talbot plays to the best of his abilities, we make the playoffs again. So that's just personal. And Paul Coffey, a skills coach, I fully agree with. Paul Coffey, arguably one of the greatest defensemen of Oilers history. Fully agree. Love the guy. And hopefully his defensive ability helps a lot of our defensemen. Klefbom, I know, is doing well in his development. And I think I saw some interview with him saying that he did. That he liked Paul Coffey's thing. Paul Coffey's going to be great for helping the guys down in the minors, like Ethan Bear and Evan Bouchard, who I'll get to later. Like, I am actually kind of glad about that, so. Good deal. Assistant coach additions. These actually really surprised me, to be honest. Are the three new assistant coaches, Glenn Gulletson, Trent Yanni, and Manny Viveros. I was surprised when... We'll start with Glenn Gulletson. I was surprised when they announced Glenn Gulletson as a new assistant coach, because that him being a former Flames head coach, I would think, oh, no, no way. Until I realized that Gullitson and McClellan, like, grew up together. Which, I mean, obviously, so personal relationship would help with professional. And he's a good coach. I mean, everybody knows the infamous, the YouTube video of him freaking out at the team and throwing sticks into the stands and stuff. We need someone with that fire as an assistant coach. I think that was a great pickup by the Oilers, and I am hoping for the best that Glenn Gullitson is going to be amazing for the Oilers. Trent Yanni, defensive coaching and PK coach are his main strengths from what I've read. He was with Anaheim and San Jose. I'm not sure if he was, I think he was coaching with McClellan for a while in San Jose. I can't remember. I think I saw an article that said something about that. The defensive coach and PK coach, I mean, with our brutal PK last year, I am hoping and praying that Trent Yanni makes a huge difference in that, which I will be super happy if our PK even reaches 85% this year. That will be a huge improvement off of what happened last year. And defensive coaching, I mean, I think our defense is getting better. However, defensive coaching is really important, and especially with our offensive guys, like, McDavid could use some defensive coaching, and I mean, that naturally comes out when you're a scorer, you're not going to have great defense, but whatever. Nugent Hopkins is getting a lot better, so hopefully Trent Yanni helps develop him a lot faster. Again, if Trent Yanni works with Paul Coffey with our defensemen, like Bouchard and Klefbom, Larson, well, I guess not really Larson, like Bear, Gravel, all of them, that'll be great. Because that will really help. The most important one that I wanted to get to, though, was Manny Viveros. Being the head coach of last year's WHL champion Swift Current Broncos, now that is crazy that we hired someone of his stature like that. Or stature, I guess. Someone with championship abilities, though. The thing that surprised me was when I read that he 29.4% power play over the last two seasons with the Swift Current Broncos. Now, that is amazing. Almost 30% of the power plays translated. And that is just, that's unheard of. I mean, the WHL, sure. I mean, you can argue that it's an easier league than the NHL and stuff. But, I mean, 29.4%, even in the WHL, that's still really good. So, I'm hoping that Viveros can bring that to the Oilers, especially with that brutal power play last year, 10, 15%, not even. And I think the Oilers led last year in shorthanded goals against. Like, that was brute. Like, our power play was so terrible last year. So, I'm hoping that Gullitson, Yanni, and Viveros can bring a lot to the table. And I'm sure they will. But the thing is only time will tell. This year will definitely tell how we're going to do in the future. But so far, I think things are looking up on coaching end of things anyway. So, hopefully, it all works out. Major signings. We have quite a few signings. And one that hasn't happened yet that I want to talk about as well. So, major signings. The big one that I wanted to talk about was the signing of Mikko Koskinen. The goalie from over in Finland. 1 year, $2.5 million. I do kind of disagree with that contract. That is a hefty price to pay for a backup. I mean, looking at his stats, though, I mean, it wasn't too bad. He was originally drafted in 2009 to the Islanders. 31st overall, so the first pick in round two. His NHL stats aren't great. He's only played four games in the NHL. 0.873 save percentage and 4.33 goals against average. However, he is 2-1-0. So, four games, 2-1-0. I guess he was pulled in one of them. So, I guess you could technically say 2-2-0. Even though you have a brutal GAA and save percentage in the NHL, 2-2-0 on a team like the Islanders, still not the worst in the world. I mean, I won't complain about that. His Liga, I think it's Liga. I don't remember how to pronounce that league. L-I-I-G-A. I think it's Liga. Played 108 games in Liga. 2.04 goals against average. 0.928 save percentage. 52, 29, and 25. Oh, excuse me. So that's actually not bad. Like, that's around 500 hockey. Well, he what would that be, 108 games, 75, or 78, 77. So you're getting points in about 75% of those games, which, personally, is not bad at all, to get about 75% of the games with points. And, like, to have 67% of those as 2 points is great. So, his KHL stats, 184 games in the K. He had under 2 goals against average. He had 1.99 goals against average and a .926 save percentage with 101 wins, 58 losses, and 15 ties. That is, I don't even know what that is, 115 of 184 games with points. So, again, that's like arguably 67%-ish with points, which I would not complain about. I will not complain about that. I am actually, like I said, if your goalie is averaging like 65 to 80% of games getting points, you're making the playoffs. You are without a doubt making the playoffs, because that is just insane. Speaking of playoffs, he's represented Finland in 2 World Cups and 1 Olympics. He, in 14 international games, this is just insane. 1.52 goals against average, .932 save percentage for 10-4-0. 10-4-0 in 14 games with almost 1.5 goals against average. That is amazing. For a backup goalie, if he can pull off, even if he can pull off his KHL stats, or even his Liga stats in the NHL with the Oilers as a backup, I will be glad. And I could see that $2.5 million making more sense to me if his stats continue in his KHL Liga days kind of stat. What am I trying to say? His Liga and KHL stats translate into his NHL nowadays, that would just be perfect for backup goaltender. Like, Talbot would have such a load off. I mean, for Talbot to have played 72 games a few years ago in just the regular season, or I think it was 68 to 72, but then also play the playoffs after, majority of the playoff games, wow. If we had Koskinen playing to his Liga KHL abilities, such a load off of Talbot, and we could trust our goaltenders fully. So, that's not bad. I'm glad about that. So, Tyler Vessel, I think it's Vessel, I'm probably pronouncing it wrong, signed to a 1-year, $735,000 contract. Originally drafted in 2014 to Edmonton, 153rd overall, so round 6. He spent the last 4 years with the NCHC University of Nebraska, Omaha. His best season was 16-17, 14-21-35, and 39 games played. So you're almost averaging a point per game, which isn't bad at all. He played 11 games in the AHL after signing in 2017-18, and he had 6 points in 11 games played, 3 goals, 3 assists. So you're averaging just over 0.5 points a game, which in the NHL, 0.5 would get you probably like 3rd, 4th line. So, I mean, in the AHL, though, that's still not bad. I mean, I won't complain. Getting almost a point per game over in the NCHC, and then just over 0.5 in the A, not too bad. So, he's going to be one of those works, though. He's going to be a work in progress for a while, I think so. One that I'm really glad about, another goalie signing, Stuart Skinner, to 3-year entry-level contract, $925,000. This signing made me so happy when I read it. Originally drafted 2017 to Edmonton, 78th overall, so round 3. His most recent year was split between the Lethbridge Hurricanes and the WHL champion Swift Current Broncos, in which he led the Broncos to the Memorial Cup with outstanding playoff performance. 2.20 goals against average, .932 save percentage in 26 games played. And congratulations to him for leading the Broncos to the Memorial Cup. That is amazing. And for the Oilers to have signed him makes me so glad, because he is definitely going to be a goalie of the future. I could see him being our starter. Like, not until like probably 2023, 2024. So, I mean, we're looking 5-6 years down the road. But still, like, he's going to be a guy to watch out for. I guarantee you he will be on the roster within the next 5 years. In 5 years, he'll be on the Oilers' main starting roster. Oh, man. That coughs today. Whether or not it's a backup or a starter, I don't know. We'll probably still have Talbot around in 5 years. I'm hoping, anyway, we'll have Talbot still around in 5 years. So, Stuart Skinner, definitely a name to watch out for. Cooper Merritt, we signed him to a 3-year entry-level contract for $925,000. Plays center and right wing, so he's one of those versatile forwards, which, personally, I think that versatile forwards are going to be, are like the way of the future. Like, you just look at Nugent Hopkins. He's, even though he's not by like hockey DB and cap friendly, they don't classify him as anything but a center. But then with Nuge playing left wing last year, I mean, you could arguably say he is a versatile forward. But Cooper Merritt, center right wing, 3-year, $925K per. He's originally drafted in 2015 to Philadelphia, 158th overall, so that's round 6. We acquired him in the New Jersey Devils trade for Patrick Maroon, which I still personally don't like that Patrick Maroon trade, but whatever. Great that he's going to play for his hometown St. Louis Blues. Congrats to Patrick Maroon on that as well. Cooper Merritt most recently played for the NCAA University of Michigan, which he had an outstanding time in the NCAA. 2017-18 season, 40 games played, 16 goals, 35 assists for 51 points. That is over a point per game. That's like Draisaitl level production, because Draisaitl averages like 1.1 goals or points a game. Like, Cooper Merritt could do some damage, especially because after signing with Bakersfield, he played 3 games with Bakersfield, 1 goal, 2 assists for 3 points in 3 games. A point per game even in the AHL, that's, I believe, like a point per game would be like first level material in the A. So Cooper Merritt, he's going to be another one I think to watch out for. Again, it's going to be a long road, a long development road, I think, for Cooper Merritt, just because he isn't like amazing, but he's not terrible either. So he's going to be a good prospect. I, again, like Skinner, I could see him making the team probably a little sooner than Skinner, just because I think goalies tend to have a longer development track than forwards. So Cooper Merritt, probably, let's see, we're going into 18-19. I could see him around 2022 if he's continues on a really good development path. He'll be here soon, I could imagine. Tobias Reeder is the next one, right wing and left wing. 1 year, $2 million contract. I didn't know this until I read up on it a couple days after we signed him. He was originally drafted in 2011 to Edmonton, but he never played a game with Edmonton. We traded him immediately to Arizona, I believe. Let me check that quick. Yeah, we traded him instantly to Arizona. So he spent from... he was drafted in 2011, 114th overall, round 4. Spent 2014 and most of 28... from 2014 to most of 2018, 58 games with the Arizona Coyotes. In that time, with the 58 games of that, he had 19 points. So, I mean, not great, but... And then he spent the last 20 games with the LA Kings, where he only had 6 points, so he kind of went downhill after the trade. His best season was in 2015-16 with Arizona. 37 points in 82 games, 14 goals, 23 assists. So, that's not bad. And considering looking at the penalty minutes here on HockeyDB, looking at his penalty minutes versus his production, he does really well for not taking penalties. In 2016-17, he had 34 points in 80 games and only had 6 penalty minutes that whole season. So that is not bad. And minus 8. That's actually, I think, his best season. Yeah, it was minus 8 was his best season. So, I mean, he's never been in the pluses in his career. However, if he's put on the right line with the Oilers, I wouldn't be surprised if he makes it into the pluses this year. I'll get to that later when I give you my expected lines. He only has 4 games of playoff experience as well, and no points in there. So, unfortunately, not. I think $2 million's a little too much for him. But, I mean, again, only time's going to tell how he plays. So, and Kyle Brodziak. That was the other one that really, I think, was kind of major. Was Kyle Brodziak. The fact that he was 2 years, 100, not 150, geez, $1.15 million per year. Originally drafted in 03 to Edmonton. 214th overall in round 7, so he was right near the end of the draft. Spent his first 4 years in Edmonton before a trade to Minnesota at the end of the 08-09 season. His best season was in 2011-2012, so his second year in Minnesota. He had 44 points in 82 games, I believe. Oh, no, sorry, third year. Sorry, third year with Minnesota. 44 points in 82 games, 22-22. 66 penalty minutes, though. He, looking at his stats, he is kind of notorious for taking penalties, which kind of sucks. His most recent season, he's played the last 3 with the Blues. His most recent, 33 points in 81 games with 33 penalty minutes. I mean, even though he takes a lot of penalties, which kind of annoys me, because I don't like when players take a lot of penalties. I mean, you gotta look at the positives of Kyle Brodziak. He's a physical player, and I could see him doing well. He was plus 13 last year, too, so you can tell he's definitely more on the defensive side of things. Since 2012-2013 was his worst year, he was minus 18. And since then, he's been minus 6 and higher since 2013. So you can tell that his defensive side has definitely grown in the last 5 years. Especially this most recent season with St. Louis. I mean, it might help that St. Louis has an amazing team and that he had some good players around him. But that's not to say that Edmonton isn't the same way. So I could see Brodziak doing some good things. $1.15 million, I'm not too mad about. That's actually a pretty decent deal for him. Fourth line, maybe a little pricey to some people, but I don't think it's that bad of a deal, honestly, as much as people were complaining about it. And the one thing that hasn't happened yet that has really annoyed me is the Nurse signing. Still no Nurse signing. Peter Chiarelli did a press conference a couple days ago, I think on the 8th of August. Today's the 10th, I think he did it on the 8th, 7th or 8th. He said that they are still working on a deal. Personally, I expect a 2-year bridge. At least I wouldn't be surprised on a 2-year bridge. And I'm going to average between 2.5 and 3 mil per. So that will still leave Edmonton with, I believe, we currently have $5 million in cap space. That'll leave us about $1.5 to $2 million still left to sign a. Because Chiarelli said he also wants to sign a 14th forward. So that would leave enough to sign a kind of quieter guy. However, I wouldn't be surprised if some of these guys don't work out, or if Nurse doesn't sign and does go and sign with someone else. In my projected lines, I'll explain how I have that set out, because I do have it set where Nurse isn't in the projected lines yet. Just because I based my projected lines off of who has signed right now and who is officially on the main starting roster. Okay, 2018 draft selections. So this happened a while ago. I just haven't been able to get around to recording a podcast for a while. So the first round selection, 10th overall, Evan Bouchard on defense. That, I was surprised that Evan Bouchard dropped so low. I expected him to go 5-6 overall, but for 10th, that was definitely a good pick for the Oilers. Perfect pick. Even though people said that he wasn't the most NHL-ready defenseman, I think he'll be the higher potential defenseman of who was available at the time. So, I think he'll be a good pick. they said here on the site I'm looking on, they said he pretty much fell right into the Oilers' laps. Especially when Montreal took the best center in the draft of Jesperi Kotkaniemi. Yeah, I think I'm saying that right. Arizona going way off the board with Barrett Hayton, Chicago with Adam Boqvist. I think Adam Boqvist would have been a good pick as well had Chicago not have taken him. However, like they say here, he's often concussed. So, don't really, I'd prefer us not to have taken a Taylor Hall kind of guy who's always injured and can never play a full season, or Nugent Hopkins kind of guy because they always seem to be injured. And then of Dobson, Wallstrom, and Bouchard, I think Bouchard was the proper choice. So, but yeah, the risk reward is going to be really good for Evan Bouchard, I believe. So, second round picks, 40th overall, we took Ryan McLeod from the Mississauga Steelheads. I don't know how I feel about that pick. Personally, I don't know. 6'2", 203 pounds, center. Let's see, high hockey IQ, creativity in offensive zone. His release is rapid and hard. Yeah. McLeod was projected to be a first-round pick. I don't know. Because I think he would have been a first-round pick had guys have not gone so crazy with their first rounds. This year was a really weird draft year because of the picks that people made. Which, I mean, I'm not mad. We got some good players this year in the draft, so. Not really terrible draft. Holy, I am yawning up a storm today. And then the other second-round pick, which we ended up trading for, our third and fifth-round picks. So our third-round pick was 71st overall. We traded that to Montreal, as well as our fifth round at 133rd overall. Both of those went to Montreal for pick 62, who we ended up picking Oliver Rodrigue, who was, I believe, the top-rated North American goalie and the son of one of Edmonton's goalie trainers. So, I mean, that doesn't really matter because he's a good goalie. So, yeah, they said, don't let his size fool you. He's 6'1 and 156 pounds. That is light. Like, holy crap, I did not imagine that. So, yeah, they say here, don't expect to see Rodrigue in an Oilers uniform for at least 5 years. So, similar to Skinner, is that Skinner and Rodrigue, I think, are going to be competing for that starter role once Talbot retires. I wouldn't be surprised if Rodrigue and Skinner both are goalies when he retires, so. Between him, McLeod, yeah. So, now, I mean, our drafts this year, our draft was really good. Then our 6th and 7th round picks, they weren't really anything too special. They were both kind of foreign guys. 164th overall in round 6, we selected Michael Kesselring. 6'4", 191 pounds from New Hampton. They say that he scores and he has great size. Yeah, they say he looks like a player who's taking advantage of his opposition due to his size. So, I mean, yeah, and they say he's a long-term project for the Oilers. A lot of the guys who go 4th round and later usually don't even make the NHL. So, unless, of course, it's like one of those kind of guys who, like Kyle Brodziak. Brodziak selected 7th in the 7th round, and he just magically makes it. Or, who am I thinking of now? Crap. Why can't I think of his name? He was selected in 7th round, and he is there. Oh, Byfuglien. Dustin Byfuglien. He was selected in the 7th round, and look at him now. He's one of the top guys in the NHL, like, you can get some good guys late. And then 195th overall in the 7th round pick, that was Patrick Sekinen, 6'2", 198 pounds, from the Espoo Blues in Finland. So, I mean, I don't know. We'll find out, I guess. We'll find out how these guys are in due time. And depending on how they do down in the AHL with the Condors and under the direction of, Jay Woodcroft, We'll find out. So, finally, this is going to be a little bit of a shorter episode of the podcast, but finally, we're getting down to my projected lines. So, I did base these kind of off of what happened last year, based off of who got traded, who we still have, who's been signed and who hasn't been signed yet. So right now I have my top line is sitting the same as last year, with McDavid centering Nuge on the left and Ratty on the right. I don't know, the Ratty extension kind of threw me off a little when they announced that. Wherever it was. I don't remember exactly what that was. 800,000 for this year. Which isn't too bad to pay for a first. If he can produce with McDavid and Nuge, like, I think Ratty was doing a little better near the end of the season. If he can produce on, like, at least a, like, 0.6 points per game kind of thing, I won't be mad at a 800,000 first liner. Like, that's good. Second line, I have Draisaitl centering Lucic and Puljujarvi. I think the Lucic-Draisaitl-Puljujarvi combination really started to pick up a little near the end of the season, especially between Dry and Puljujarvi. Lucic is going to have a long road ahead of him to get back from that. No goals in the last, I think they said, 48 games of the season or something like that, which is brutal for a second liner who we're paying freaking $6 million for the next 5 years. Like, he's got to step up his game. Otherwise, I don't know how much longer I can put up with him. Hopefully, if he keeps producing this way in 2021, hopefully he's gone when he can submit his eight teams. Jujar, third line, I have Jujar, Kara, centering Åberg and Strom, or Åberg. I think proper pronunciation is Åberg, I believe. We only have Åberg for this year left, so depending on how he performs this year, it's really going to change things. If he doesn't perform well, I mean, I could see Kyler Yamamoto possibly slotting in where Åberg is, if Åberg doesn't perform, and if Kara gets injured. I could definitely see Kaylor Yamamoto coming up from the minors to fill that third line center, or if Åberg gets injured, that third line left wing slot. Strom, even though he's technically a center, he's played center and right wing, I think he plays a lot better on the wing. When they moved him on the wing last year, his stats got way better. So similar to Nuge, is that I think they'll be better. Strom will be better on the wing than at center, as well as Nuge is better on the wing than at center. And then the fourth line, I have Brodziak centering Kajula and Cassian. This was one that really I had a hard time deciding about. I didn't put Tobias Reeder anywhere in here. However, Reeder plays left wing and right wing. So I could see him possibly slotting in for a Ratty if Ratty underperforms. Or I could see him slotting in for a Kajula if Kajula underperforms. I think it's going to be more of Reeder will sit in McDavid's right wing, because I believe McDavid and Reeder had played together for Team Canada. I've seen a lot of people saying that he's going to be a bottom six guy. Personally, because of his experience with McDavid, I see him slotting in a top six spot, possibly even on McDavid's line. I wouldn't be surprised if in the first 20 or first 15, 20 games, for a few of those games, we see a Nuge McDavid Reeder line, it's quite possible in my mind. So, but no, Brodziak, Kajula, Cassian, fourth line. I mean, again, Reeder possibly slotting in for Kajula if he needs kind of thing. Åberg slotting in there, or Yamamoto, whoever it is. Is Yamamoto, I could see making the team this year. But as a 13th forward. And then my defensive pairings, they're kind of thrown off because of the fact that Nurse hasn't been signed yet. I have Klefbom and Larsson together. I think they played most of last year together, and they were really good when they were. I have Sekera and Russell. Russell technically is a left defenseman, but I have Sekera and Russell together. And then I have Benning. And then because of the Nurse not signing, I have Gravel there. Kevin Gravel, who we had signed to a one-year $700,000 deal. However, I could also see Ethan Bear slotting in that spot if Nurse doesn't get signed. However, I know Nurse is going to get signed eventually. It's not a matter of if, but when. So Benning and Nurse is basically that line. I'm not too comfortable on my defensive pairings, so don't take my word for it, but I have new, yeah, so first line, Nuge, McDavid, Ratty, Draisaitl, Lucic, Puljujarvi, Kara, Aberg, Strome, Brodziak, Kajula, Cassian, Klefbom, Larson, Sekera, Russell, Benning, Nurse, possibly Bear and Gravel as 7th, 8th defenseman, and then Talbot's starter and Koskinen as the backup, and then burying Al Montoya down in the minors, which, I mean, that Al Montoya signing was kind of useless, to be honest. I mean, luckily we only pay him for this year and then he's gone, so kind of glad about that. So, and then, yeah, so it kind of annoys me, though, that we still have $1.6 million for buyouts for the next 2 years because of Pouliot and Griba. Can't believe we're still paying Pouliot $1.3 million a year for the next three, but oh well, I guess things happen for a reason. So anyway, thank you for joining me on this episode of The War Room. Next episode probably won't be until the start of the preseason in September. Might do a early September episode with a few other people. We'll break down a lot of the players and why we would slot them where. We'll give our updated, plan on giving our updated projected lines and going in depth as to why we put them where we did. So tune in next time to hear all of that. For now, I'm Keenan. Thank you for tuning into The War Room, and we will see you next time.